court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Tommy, last week we laid down one of our best teasers of all time.
Yeah. What was it?
We said we're going to keep talking about property law.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we knew everybody was going to be excited about property law because that is a hot button topic.
Somebody asked me about my podcast the other day at my new office at... Campbell Woods, PLLC. Right.
There's a little plug there.
Free advertising.
Commercial plug.
And they said, what's your podcast about? And I gave them kind of, you know, the overview about what it's about. I said, what's your latest episode on? Oh, it's on property law. And they said, oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, really. We're kind of, you know, light on the law and pretty heavy on humor. At least I like to think we are. So,
well, I don't know. Some are more humorous than others. It depends on the topic.
Yeah, that's true.
But we try to keep it interesting. I think it can be interesting, even if it's not funny. It can be interesting.
That is true.
Because you know what? People are bizarre. The strangest stories you'll hear are true stories. They're stranger than fiction. Because there's no telling what people will do.
That's true. So, in the teaser, we said we were going to talk about easements. Do you know what an easement is?
That's when you're going to ease on down the road. Isn't that right? Keep on trucking and ease on down the road. Come at me, bro.
No.
Oh.
Cash me outside?
Yeah.
No, it's actually, legally speaking, it is the right to cross or otherwise use someone else's land for a specified purpose. That's kind of the general legal definition of it. The literal definition of it, which I looked up, is the state or feeling of comfort or peace. So it's like easing on down the road.
It comes from the Latin easum motto, which means have a chair and make yourself comfortable.
Easum motto?
Yeah.
It's like one of those tomato dishes, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, so we're talking
Italian.
Italian easements. Easum motto.
Italian easement is, you don't get out of my way, I'm going to run you over.
So anyway, there's different types of easements, so we're going to talk all about them today. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah. I can barely contain myself. If I wasn't struggling with this sinus infection or whatever it is, I would be jumping up and down.
We've actually kind of talked a little bit about easements before in some of the previous episodes, touched on them lightly, but we're going to go really in-depth here. So,
like a spite fence easement?
Kind of, yeah. It was part of that thing. We talked about when somebody builds like a house to block somebody's view or something like that.
Yeah.
So basically you have two different types of easements. You have an affirmative easement and a negative easement.
An affirmative and a negative.
Yep.
Well, okay. That makes sense, I guess.
An affirmative easement is the right to use someone else's property for a specific purpose. And a negative easement is the right to prevent another from performing an otherwise lawful activity on their own property. So that makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, so one is you got to let somebody come across your land. And the other is you can keep somebody from doing something on their land you don't think they should or you don't like it or something.
That's right. So here's a couple examples.
So I have to break that down into layman terms because I am a layman.
You are a layman. I can attest to that.
I am a layman for the county. You don't know that one, do you?
Do not.
It was actually a lineman. That was an old Glenn Campbell song.
Oh, a lineman for the county.
Yeah.
Like running line?
Yeah. Yeah, like telephone line.
We'll talk about telephone line here in a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that must have been like a premonition that I had.
You must have ESP.
I have ESPN.
Yep. I knew you were going to say that.
So you've been around me too long.
Way too long. So an affirmative easement, like you said, might allow somebody to basically drive their cattle over the land of, like, somebody else, and that would be an affirmative easement. They have the ability to drive cattle over somebody else's land, or you know, the ability to cross somebody else's land, and that's been granted. And that's an affirmative easement.
Mm.
A negative easement might restrict somebody from basically building a large fence on their property that blocks their view. That would be like a negative easement, or like planting a bunch of trees that blocks somebody's view. That's a negative easement, almost kind of like an injunction type thing. So you're kind of basically stopping somebody from doing something. So those are your two basic ones. Now, I'd say if we're breaking it down in percentages, affirmative easement versus negative easement, we're probably somewhere in the ballpark of 90 or 95 to 10 to 5% in the favor of affirmative. Negative easements are pretty rare, I think.
Yeah, I would think so.
You have to have a very specific set of circumstances in order to have a negative easement.
So if you lacked an easement to drive your cattle over somebody's property, that'd be a Cadillac?
I had to put that one together. It's been a long week so far. It's only Wednesday, but I've been working a lot.
I was a thinker.
Yeah, it made me think. A little too hard. So those are the two basic kinds of easements. Now, whenever you're dealing with easements, there's two different parties. There's the dominant and the servient estate. So
that's not like the Republicans and the Democrats.
No, it's different.
Okay.
So there's basically two different parties with that regards
sounds
to...
sounds kind of sexual.
You think?
Yeah. Dominant and the... what was it? The receptive?
Servient.
The servient? Sounds like we're getting into 50 Shades of Grey or something.
I promise you we're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Grey.
The party that gains the benefit of the easement is the dominant estate. So.
Oh, I own your ass.
They're the ones that get the benefit, basically. And the ones granting the benefit or suffering the burden is the servient estate. So that is kind of the terminology you look at when you're looking at easements. Who's the dominant? Who's the servient?
That would be enough just to make me be unreasonable about somebody dominating me, even if they had a reasonable reason to be through there. What? You're dominant and I'm subservient to you? Forget that.
Well, you know.
You can't have your easement. I'm going to fight you. Sometimes, I'll see you in court.
Sometimes you get paid for easements.
Sometimes you're supposed to get paid and you don't.
I don't know if anybody
like
ever told
billboard
you.
Billboard easements.
That's right. I don't know if I ever told you this or not, but sometimes dollars and cents matter to people.
That's exactly right. Dollars will influence people.
They will.
Keep that in mind. That's words to live by.
Now, there's also two different kinds of easements, as in public or private easements. Public easement is basically something held by like a government or a different kind of... municipality or something like that, whereas a private easement is one that is owned by a private individual. So an example like that, like when we were basically talking about this a little bit before, was like a sidewalk. Like you, when you buy a house in the city, you might have an easement given to the city to basically put in a sidewalk. Sometimes that's called a right-of-way as well.
Yeah, they have so many feet on either side of the road or something like that to the city does or whatever, to do whatever they want to do to your land.
Yeah, and it can be other things, too. For example, like if there was some sort of a...
You run a sewer line.
Yeah, a sewer line that needed to be run through somebody's yard. I mean, they can get an easement that way as well. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different ways it can happen, but you have public versus private.
The best example to me of a public easement is summer rental.
Yes, absolutely.
when John Candy and his family wake up the next morning and find they evidently have the only public access to the beach anywhere, and everybody and their brother is coming through their yard and their house and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
That is hilarious.
I did a paper in law school. It was all about the right of the public to beach access in Florida. And a lot of it talked about easements and things like that. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later on, but that's one of the things you talk about is easements and beach access and things like that.
Yeah, that makes it tough because if you don't get, like if you're renting a house down at the beach and if you don't get a beachfront one and say it's even if it's just across the street from the beach,
yeah,
you may not be able to walk straight across the street and go to the beach. You might have to go down 5 blocks to be able to go to the beach before you have a public access because the rest of them would be a private easement where it's only an easement for the people that own the property or whatever.
Right. And sometimes you have different as far as beach things go, we're different, like... groups of property owners, like little HOAs and things like that, have an easement that's only exclusively for that HOA.
Right.
There's one place in Florida on A1A just south of Melbourne as you head towards Sebastian Inlet called Floridana Beach. There's this little beach park there, and the beach park is only for residents of Floridana Beach.
Wow.
So if you park there, you will get towed. So,
well, we when we were the spot that we were at one time down at Tybee Island, it was where we would get to the beach was right next to where the public access was.
Yeah.
So we would just be overwhelmed on the weekends. Now, during the week, it wasn't a big deal. But on the weekends, you were just overwhelmed with the public driving out from Savannah to come out and go to the beach.
Well, one thing, too, and we're kind of getting off topic a little bit or ahead of ourselves talking about beach access, but it seems timely since we're on it and we're daydreaming about the beach right now.
That's right.
That you might have a public access or a public easement to get to the beach, but if there's not any parking there, then it's effectively useless. So I imagine where you were, there was probably a lot of parking spaces there, too, where the public could park.
Yes, there was.
So I know where I used to live in Florida, like it was called Indy Atlantic, which is beachside Melbourne, Florida. They're very good in that little area about having lots of walkways. Almost every block, there was a public access, which was really good.
But there was no parking, huh?
Not parking at a lot of them. So basically...
that would kept down the number of people that would be there.
It did. Mainly it was a lot of residents that used these private ones. So you'd probably almost have a kind of private beach there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of parking on the street, but they would still have to cross A1A, and a lot of people didn't want to do that. They would go to one of the beach parks where there actually was parking. So that's usually the more cluster of people were near these beach parks.
I saw an article the other day said they're closing the beach.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
That beach that was made famous in that Leonardo DiCaprio movie, The Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
It's like, is that Thailand or something like that, where that beach is?
I believe so, yeah. It was somewhere in Thailand.
And they're closing it for, I don't know, a year or so to let it recover because the tourism has just maxed the place out.
Really?
So only people that live there are going to be allowed there. You're not allowed to go there as a tourist for like a year or something like that.
Give them time to replenish those weed fields, too.
Why was there a lot of weed there?
Yeah, don't you remember? That was the other people on the island were... They were growing a lot of marijuana, and they stumbled across that field.
I don't remember. I remember seeing it, but I didn't remember what it was about. It was a while back, and I'm not much of a Leonardo DiCaprio fan.
Well, some places like that, when you travel to them, those little places will charge you almost like a some sort of entrance visa for like the lone little particular place, like a tourist type tax.
Right.
So they charge pretty heavily to go to these smaller places. So, and they also limit the number of people that can go to these different places. There was one place in Brazil. It's a kind of a famous surf spot. I think it was Fernando de Nehorino or something like that. It's like basically a national island.
I won't dispute that.
And they only let so many people on there. Hmm. And so it's really hard to try to go there and surf. It's got great surf. So, but only so many people are on the island at a time. It's like a bar where you stand outside by the velvet rope and they're like, all right, you're in. You? No.
So. You were looking for Patrick Swayze, were you?
That's right.
To catch the Grand Kawana or whatever it was, Kahuna or something.
Bodhi?
Yeah. The big wave, whatever he called the big wave, mother of all waves or whatever. Was that mother of all dragons? I forget.
Came across an unclaimed piece of meat in Baja. I love Point Break, by the way, in case you couldn't tell.
That's a great show.
It is. Okay, so back to actual easements and away from the beach.
Oh man, I'm home from the beach now.
So there's different kinds of easements too. There's a pertinent and impertinent. A pertinent.
And an impertinent.
Nope. Engross easements.
Engross ones?
Yeah, engross.
Is that ones that like they didn't keep it up and there's like dog poop on it and stuff?
I'll explain it to you here. An easement appurtenant is one that benefits the dominant estate and runs with the land. And so basically it would be transferred automatically whenever the dominant estate is transferred. So if you sell property that has an easement appurtenant, then that easement would travel with the land. Now, the other kind is an easement engross, and that basically benefits some sort of individual or just a legal entity rather than the actual estate itself. So it doesn't really run with the land. It runs with the person. So
if you had it as a corporation, it would go move where you move?
No. So basically, let's use the beach example again. So say if you own a piece of property, it's beachfront, and your neighbor who lives, I guess, across the street from you or whatever. This might not be a bad example. But okay, your neighbor doesn't live across
the street.
Scratch that.
Scratch that. Back it up.
Your neighbor doesn't live across the street. He lives like beside you, but for whatever reason, there's like a cliff in front of their house to get to the beach, so they can't go down the cliff. But you say, hey, you know, Steve, I really like you, and I'm going to grant you an easement for you to use this use my beach access anytime you want, but it's only for you. It's not for you to sell. So when you sell your property, nobody else gets to use it. It's only for you.
I got it.
So that's different than saying, I'm going to sign a deed which grants you an easement over my property.
Right.
So basically the...
So it doesn't pass on beyond them. The next guy, it depends on if he likes them or not.
Exactly.
If he'll let them in there.
Yeah, and it's not something that's generally transferable because that person doesn't really have the right to do it. It's something that's kind of just for that one person.
Otherwise, he's going to have to learn to rappel.
Pretty much. Yeah. Two words for you. Zip line.
Zip lines don't go up, though.
Wait for the tide to come back in.
I don't know. That better be a good tide. Catch a good wave.
I had a couple of interesting cases in Florida, and they involved actually, one of them involved a boat dock, where the boat dock, this whole like landowner, they all had these different easements to use a piece of this boat dock. It was interesting because the land underneath the boat dock, which was underwater, was actually owned by one of the properties, and then they had granted easements to these other properties to use boat docks on the water.
You can own land underwater?
Yeah, you actually can.
How can you own land underwater? I thought once the ocean starts, it's admiralty law. It's like, I'm a sovereign citizen. We're under admiralty law.
Nope. No, you can actually, in certain places, you can own underneath the water, too.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Because if you think about it, if you're driving pylons for docks into the ground, then essentially you got to figure out whose property it is.
Well, I figure it belongs to the government at some level. Once you reach the water, because the government owns all the bodies of water.
Not always.
Out to certain points.
Not always. If it's especially if it's non-navigable, it can be owned by different people too.
Wow.
So it's when you get to stuff like that, it's very interesting. It's almost like its own little niche of a law.
I mean,
so,
if you had a lake all contained on your property, sure.
Right.
But I mean, like a river or a creek or a beach, an ocean, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we have to trace back, like, in this instance, maybe, who knows, maybe some sort of Spanish conquistador owned it at one point and transferred it to somebody or something along those lines. I don't know. So,
wow, you learn something new every day.
Now, easements are created in several different ways. The most common way, which you might guess, is called an express easement.
An express easement?
Yes.
Is that like what you get at like Disney, an express pass?
So an express easement can be granted or reserved in a deed or other legal instrument. Basically, it's kind of like a writing. It can also be incorporated by reference in subdivision plans, like there could be some sort of dedication to it. Or it could alternatively be like a restrictive covenant in the agreement of a homeowners association or something like that. These are essentially bound by the doctrines of contract law, and these are the best ones because there's not really any dispute about them because they're laid out in writing for the most part, and they're express. So very seldom do you get, I won't say seldom, but I would say you don't get as many arguments over express ones because they're spelled out better.
So basically, like, say they're developing a new subdivision,
mm-hmm.
and when you buy your property, you're told at the time you've got to allow this much space adjoining the road for a sidewalk if at some time in the future we're going to put it in.
Yeah.
So then at that later date, when they come along to do it, they can apply for the express easement because you already, in effect, have agreed to it.
Well, they don't even have to apply for it. They just come through and bulldozer it and do what they want with it. They already have an easement for it.
Well, true. I assume they would let you know, though. Hey, we're going to be digging up your yard tomorrow.
Just so you know, that tree, it's coming out.
Yeah.
So implied easements are a bit different and a bit trickier. And they're the ones that generally have to be determined by courts because people are fighting over them. Implied easements are generally not recorded and generally, nobody really knows exactly what the rules are for these implied easements until after a court decision comes down. So oftentimes, what courts look at when they're trying to figure these things out, basically, are the practices and customs of use for that particular property. So they'll look at basically the intent of the parties, their prior use, and try to determine whether or not there was some sort of implied easement that existed there before. So that's one of the kind of things they always look at is, like, has it been used as that for an implied easement?
All right. So that leads me to one of the things that I kept thinking about when you said this. There's places, especially in rural areas, where, like, the road ends and there's two pieces of property, say, right there at the end of the road, but somebody else owns a piece of property that's back behind those two pieces of property. They don't have direct access to the road.
Uh-huh.
If there's a road that leads back to that property back there. And it's just been passed down generations. Maybe this property has been in the different families for however long and just kind of been passed down, or whether it was sold or whatever. Nobody's really questioned that that road goes, even though that guy on that back piece of property technically doesn't own any of the property that road is on.
Right.
Is that your implied easement?
It can be, yeah, especially if it's not recorded. That's the main thing.
Right. In other words, they've just been doing it. Now somebody moves in one of those front pieces of property and he's a jerk and he says, I don't want this guy driving through here. Where's your right to drive here?
Yeah. So essentially that is actually next down my list. That's called an easement by necessity. And what that means is that any parcel that basically has no way to access any kind of public right-of-way may have some sort of easement over adjacent land if that land, if it's absolutely necessary to reach an otherwise kind of landlocked parcel. And they're basically, it just can't be that the property is isolated alone. There has to have been some sort of original intent to provide the lot with access, but basically there was, it was never created or never done or never recorded. So that pretty much always has to happen somewhere at some point.
I can see that being a problem though. If you, especially if it's new, there's not a road there and you buy a piece of property that for whatever reason now is available.
Yeah.
And you say, look, I got to come through here somewhere. And the guy that owns the property or the people that own the property say, you're not driving through my damn yard.
Well, generally what happens is that the person who has this landlocked property and they have their jerk neighbor who won't let them drive through the yard to get to their property, mm-hmm. they basically will file some sort of lawsuit and the judge will hear the evidence and basically a lot of times will enforce an easement against that servient estate, which basically is the one. And the way the courts often look at this is to determine who the servient estate is. So say like there's two pieces of property that are blocking off this piece of property behind them.
Right.
Oftentimes the court will look at how did that piece of property that was behind get split up. So for example, if it got split up from A, then basically A will be determined to be the servient estate,
uh-huh.
not B. Mm-hmm. Likewise, if B was the one who split that off, then B would be determined to be the servient estate because that was where that other piece was carved out from.
So they're saying that in effect, when it was carved out, you had to have a plan for how people were going to reach it because yeah. you gained some benefit from it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But and, what if it was never carved out for them? What if they were plotted that way originally?
It eventually, at some point, it would have to have been plotted out. You can keep on going back. These records go back and go back. So, I mean,
just like at some point we were all Virginia.
I don't remember that time, but yes. No, but that's exactly it. I mean,
now we're the best Virginia.
If you trace things back, you know, you can go back to certain times, and then you see those markers around town for the Savage Land Grant, that one down there on Military Road. It's that big stone that sticks up.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it was called the Savage Land Grant, and it was basically after, I think it was, I can't remember if it was after the French and Indian War or after the American Revolution, that I think it was French and Indian War. Lord
Savage?
No, not Lord Savage. I think it was Lord Dunmore, who was the governor of Virginia at that time, granted all these people who fought in the French and Indian War this large parcel of land, which was this area, and it was called the Savage Land Grant.
Hmm.
So, because originally it was owned by England.
Yeah.
So, and then it got transferred from England to, you know, whatever, down through the Savage Land Grant. I mean, sometimes if you trace property back, there should be records that go all the way back, unless the courthouse burned down or something along those lines.
Well, I think that the England now must own most of Universal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, everywhere we went, there was English people everywhere.
Yeah.
Because they were all talking with that funny accent, you know, that English people have.
The Queen's proper?
Yeah, that accent. And so, you know, you'd be there, there'd be on both sides. I've never run into so many English people that we ran into at Universal this past weekend. Bloody hell, where'd they all come from? Hey, bloke.
Is everybody having tea and crumpets?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they were all freaking out on Harry Potter land. I think that's what's brought them over there. They're all freaking out about Harry Potter stuff because that's that English stuff.
Is it?
Yeah, they all are English. That's what I had to say to Emma Watson when I thanked her for her help. Thank you, Emma Watson. Blimey! I think that's English talk.
It might be. Yeah, definitely the blimey part of it.
I will heed your warning, Emma Watson. I don't know what her name is in the Harry Potter things. I just know she's Emma Watson.
Now, one interesting thing is if you have a easement by necessity, so for example, that piece of property has that right of way to the road over like that other piece of property. Now, if another road gets built behind that road, behind that piece of property that got the easement, mm-hmm. then at that point it would be extinguished because there's no more necessity.
So you can't drive through here anymore. Well, it's more convenient. It doesn't matter. You've got your own road. Stay off my damn yard.
That's right.
Well, then don't invest in a long cement driveway. Just go with the dirt.
That's right.
Because you never know when somebody's going to come along and put in a road and now you're screwed.
Now, another way an easement can be created is through prior use. And we kind of talked about this a little bit. Now, these are all implied easements. These aren't ones that are expressed. But so basically, if somebody intended to create an easement, but then forgot to put it on the deed, then there can be an easement that way.
That's what you have lawyers for. You don't forget to put it on the deed. The lawyer fixes that.
Well, lawyers sometimes make mistakes.
That's
why it's called practicing law.
You never quite make it, do you?
That's right.
The day you died, you were still practicing.
I was listening to the Hamilton soundtrack. It said something like, not only did I practice law, I perfected it. That's one of Hamilton's things he says.
Yeah.
He's a little arrogant in that, I think.
Well, I think that was one of his major character flaws. But so, Lynn wasn't afraid to go there and say that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So some of the things the courts look at to try to determine if there was any kind of easement by prior use is they look at common ownership of the properties at one time. And again, that's kind of what I talked about with the by
necessity. Where it broke off from.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they look at that, and then there had to have been some sort of severance. And then the use occurs before the severance, or it could be afterwards. So they look at when the use basically started. And then there has to be some sort of notice, but basically not like a posted sign or something like that, but like, for example, somebody walking constantly back and forth across your land. And then basically it's necessary and beneficial. So again, there has to be some sort of beneficial use to it, and it's necessary for the person to go back and forth like that. So again, that's kind of the prior use type doctrine to establish it. Now, there can be another kind too, and this is, we talked about a little bit, something similar, and this is easement by prescription, and it is most similar to adverse possession.
Adverse possession is my favorite type of property law.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I studied that in my one semester of business law.
So oh, yes.
I was familiar with adverse possession, and I always tried to adversely possess something, but it never worked.
We have harkened back to your one semester of business law on several times on this podcast.
Yes. That one semester has come in quite handy. I think that was the only class I paid attention in. See, maybe I should have been a lawyer. No, we already established I have no ethics. Never mind. I'd never pass the test.
So the easement by prescriptions are a little bit different because, like adverse possession, there has to be some sort of hostile, continuous, and open manner for it to have been become an easement.
So when you're walking back and forth across the guy's property, you need to be hostile about it. Yeah. Look at me. Kiss my ass. I'm going to walk back and forth over here every time I want, and ain't nothing you can do about it.
Well, that's not
exactly. See, now you're being hostile.
That's not exactly what hostile means in this context. Hostile in this context means that it's against.
Well, wasn't that hostile?
It was very hostile.
Well, that's what I mean. So you're being hostile. Nobody could deny that. In a court of law, you would have an airtight case.
And that's not only like a pertinent, that's impertinent.
That's right.
But hostile means against the benefit of the person who you're crossing, not necessarily yelling insults at them.
I fought in your general direction.
A little Monty Python.
I'm not dead yet.
I'm only mostly dead. That's
bring out the dead. Bring out
Princess
the dead.
Bride. So the prescriptive easements, they are kind of interesting. I was looking at this one article, and basically it showed a metal plaque that was on the sidewalk of New York City, basically to show that you were crossing onto private property and it was a revocable license. And so basically people couldn't say it was an easement by prescription. So basically that was like in the ground.
Wow.
This is like almost kind of a disclaimer, like, don't try it.
That's really marking your territory.
I'd say so.
That's better than peeing on it.
Definitely. More noticeable.
Yeah.
So these,
especially in New York, everything's peed on anyway.
It's true. It does smell rather musty of urine.
A urine town. That's where the play comes from.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it's a parody of New York.
So also these prescriptive easements have to have been used for a certain period of years, and it's kind of varies as to how long that is based on wherever you are. The one thing that's kind of different than adverse possession is adverse possession requires exclusivity. So you basically, you're the only one using it. Mm-hmm. Whereas
it can't be like a bunch of guys got together and use this as their hunting grounds, and it was really somebody else's property, and say, look, we've been hunting here together for 10 years.
That would be more like adverse possession.
Oh, it is? But that wasn't exclusively. That was a group of people.
Well, yeah.
You said, but it has to be exclusive.
It's exclusive to that group of people. I'm talking about something more like, for example, if there was a general, like a wildlife management area where a bunch of people hunted, and many different hunters, not just a group of hunters, all crossed this one piece of property to get to this management area.
Ones you didn't know.
Yeah.
So, you knew there were other people there, but you didn't know them.
Yeah, and then this person tries to stop you from doing it, then you would sue them for easement by prescription, saying that, hey, I've been walking across your land to get to this wildlife management area for X number of years, and I was yelling at you the whole time to kiss my butt and whatever. You know,
I was very hostile. Every time I came across, I shouted insults in your direction.
Exactly. Now, they can become legally binding, and once they're legally binding, they have the same weight as a express easement as well. So, but they're just not legitimized until like a court of law kind of confirms them or baptizes them or one of the sacraments. I'm not really sure which one. But
a sacrament?
I'm speaking metaphorically.
Oh. I thought it was a religious experience.
Easement by prescription is one of those kind of common law questions you might see on a bar exam. Mm-hmm. Bar examiners love to put those kinds of questions on there because there's lots of different elements. People that make these tests love to have elements on tests because it makes you memorize multiple things.
See, I would have thought that a doctor had to write that out and give it to you.
What's that?
An easement by prescription.
I advise you to cross across his property, stat. So,
twice a day.
PRN. Under common law, basically, to have an easement by prescription, some of the elements are it has to be open and notorious, again, like I said.
Open and notorious, B-I-G.
That's right. Actual and continuous, adverse, hostile, and continuous. So those are the kind of the trigger words for that.
That's a lot of words to have to remember.
Yeah, it is. The amount of time varies from jurisdiction.
There's a lot of things to have to do in there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well just walk across it screaming insults at the guy every time you go over there to try to cover all that.
Well, you don't want to actually, you know, give away people's land. They kind of frown upon that. So it has to be kind of one of those extreme situations. And you don't see a lot of cases that involve implied easements or easements by prescriptions. I mean, it's just kind of happens.
Yeah, so. We talked about that and how there was a movement to try to do that in abandoned buildings in big cities.
Yeah.
That were being basically just bought up for future use when the property, the area would be worth more, like the way New York, Manhattan has, you know, grown up and then it's moved out into Brooklyn and parts of Brooklyn that were the low rent district. Now they're charging thousands and thousands of dollars in rent because it's now grown up.
Yeah. And that's an adverse possession type thing, which right. is similar to it. Now, the interesting thing is that easement by prescription can also be used to terminate an easement.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So basically, for example, if there was a servient tenement, so basically somebody had an easement on their property, and they built a fence which blocked another easement.
Yeah.
Then basically, the person who had that original easement would have to do something in order to defend their easement for during that statutory period. And if they didn't, then basically that new easement would trump the old easement.
Hmm.
So that's one way to terminate it.
Well, I'll be back.
And it's interesting, and we were talking about the beach cases, and since we already talked about it, I'm not going to bring them up again, but a lot of times there were these cases in California, especially where these different landowners were trying to get rid of these easements across their own property. So they would do things like move large rocks in front of it, plant trees, things that have thorns on them to try to dissuade people from using it.
Yeah.
And that's when like entities like the Surfrider Foundation would come in and sue to maintain those things. But the thing is, if they did that and people stopped using it after a certain period of time, it'd be gone.
Hmm.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
You lose it.
That's right.
That applies to a lot of things.
Yeah. There was one, I lived in Isla Mirada, Florida, which is in the Keys. And contrary to popular belief, there are not a lot of beaches in the Keys.
Oh, really?
No, they're not. It's mainly just
water and land. Huh?
Water and rock, conch rock.
Yeah.
There was one really nice beach right behind my house, and the beach was public, but there was only one little easement to get to it. It was kind of interesting, too. They did a lot of photo shoots for models down there too, which was mm-hmm. kind of nice. Mm-hmm. And but what they had done is there were these large boulders which basically blocked off the easement and made it look like it was private. Like you would not know that that was a public easement
unless you knew it.
Unless you knew it. And I knew it and I used it and I did not lose it. So
well, I mean, you saw all those models down there using it and that made you lose it. And so you found a way to get down there. The boulders didn't stop you.
I remember one time I was out for a run, and it was really close to my house. So I was finishing up the run. I came back, and I went down there to kind of just finish up my jog and thought, oh, maybe I'll stretch for a minute. And there was actually a photo shoot going on down there. I ended up stretching for getting a good stretch in.
Yeah, for a good stretch.
And then I walked back to the house.
You looked like Gumby by the time you went back.
Yeah, I felt like they were looking at me a little weird, like, oh, what's this guy doing out here?
He's a perv.
Exercising my right. This is a public beach. I have a right to be here.
Yeah, you're a perv.
Yeah, no, I'm not. So the question is, and we've already talked about it a little bit, do these easements go on forever?
You mean in distance or in time?
In time.
In time?
Temporally.
Well, yeah, as long as everything's there, they should.
That's right, but they can basically be terminated.
Well, if you don't use them, you lose them.
That's
one. If you somehow block it off and people quit going there.
That's one. Basically, if somebody signs a release and says that owns that easement and says, you know what, we don't need it anymore. I'm going to give it back to you. You can release somebody from it. So the dominant estate can release the servient estate.
Please release me. Let me go.
There could be some writing which says the easement only lasts for a certain amount of time. So it could be kind of one of those self-ending ones. Like I'll give you an easement across here for 20 years. It could end after 20 years.
You can cross here and my cold, dead fingers let go of it.
Abandonment, which is kind of similar to the argument that basically there's another prescriptive easement that ended it. So basically nobody uses it anymore. Maybe like if there was an easement that went across to a lake or something across somebody's property, mm-hmm. and then the lake dried up. Mm-hmm. So there was no need for anybody to go to the lake anymore. And nobody used it for 20 years. Then all of a sudden the rains returned and then there's a lake. You'd say, oh, no, nobody's used for 20 years. There's no easement here.
What is it? This sounds like prehistoric things. The lake dried up and then the rains returned.
That's right.
Man climbed out of the pond looking like a salamander.
One interesting thing is there was some sort of merger.
A merger?
So basically, if property B was behind property A and B had an easement over A's property, but then A said, you know what? I'm going to buy B. So A bought B. And they joined the land, then basically that would extinguish that easement because it's no longer...
It would be unnecessary because he'd own it, or it'd be on his own property.
That's right. There's no longer a servient and a dominant estate. There's only just one piece of property. Mm-hmm. So, kind of interesting. Like we said, basically prescription. So, basically you do another easement over top of the other easement, and nobody fights you for it. And condemnation, which is what we talked about a little bit last episode. So for whatever reason, the government has some sort of eminent domain argument and says, nope, it belongs to us now and has to pay some sort of just compensation for it.
Oh, I thought you meant like, I damn thee to hell. That kind of condemnation.
That's pretty biblical. So,
God says, I damn thee to hell. I need access to the lake. Boat's there.
Those are easements in a nutshell.
He doesn't need a boat. He walks on the water.
That's right. Or parts it.
Yeah. Just parts it and walks on the shells.
Now, there's been different kinds of easements which have been granted, and I'm just going to run down this list. Right to light, which I think we talked about before. So basically...
Right to life?
No, right to light. So basically, if you have the right to receive a minimum quantity of light from a window or other aperture in your building...
Oh, so if somebody builds something that blocks it off or something like that?
Yep. There's aviation easements, so you have the right to use airspace above a specified altitude above a piece of property. This happens a lot of times in the Midwest when you have people spraying their crops and things like that.
Right.
So sometimes you have to do that. Railroad easements, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with them. They ease on down the track wherever they want to go.
No railroad easement story?
No, not that I can think of.
Nothing about a hobo.
I mean, they were
nothing about
there.
A hobo and an easement.
Oh, I had ran into plenty of hobos when I was in Waycross.
Did you?
Yeah, I made a big mistake with that. I nearly got my ticket punched there. They used to, for whatever reason, they would come across it. You have when you build your train and it's all built and getting ready to go, you do a mechanical inspection on it, and they do what they call run the air, which is they connect the air through the entire train with the engines on it, so you can do a brake test.
That's with hydraulics for the brakes, basically.
Yeah,
but it's air; it's pneumatic.
Yeah, it's a negative air pressure system.
Okay,
the air has to pump the brakes off. Therefore, when you remove the air, then the brakes automatically are on.
Hmm.
So see that they changed that when they first came out, the brakes you had to pump them on. Well, that's when you'd see those wild scenes from the Old West about them uncoupling the car and the car rolling down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a very smart fellow you may have heard of that invented this negative air brake system.
Tommy Smurl?
No.
Oh.
No, I wasn't around back then, although I may look like it. George Westinghouse.
Oh, yeah.
He invented the negative air brake system for trains so that you have to have an air flow to take the brakes off. And when you don't have that air flow, the brakes lock up.
That's an interesting idea.
Well, there you go. So anyway, they would do these air tests to get the train ready before it'd go to make sure it was all right. Well, they would also look in the boxcars to make sure we didn't have any unwanted visitors.
Uh-huh.
When they'd find them, they'd holler for the train master, which is what I was down there. And I'm supposed to do something about it. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm just a guy there trying to supervise the yard. I'm not in charge of security, but instead they call the train master because you've only got one railroad cop for like 500 miles.
Yeah.
So what's the odds he's going to be available? So you have to go down there. So I go down there and here's this guy in the boxcar. He doesn't speak English. And I'm like, where do you think you're going? And he's like, Savannah. And I thought he said Savannah. I said, Savannah? No, Atlanta. Atlanta? Well, this train isn't going to Atlanta. Savannah. And I'm like, look, you can't be on this train unless you got a ticket. Do you have a ticket? And he was holding like a bedroll rolled up under his arm.
Right.
He started reaching inside that bedroll with one hand. And at that point, I realized, oh, hell. That was the wrong question to ask.
He's about to stab me.
Yeah, he's going to do something. I don't know what's coming out of the bedroll. And I said, ho, 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 that's good. That's good. That ticket looks good from here. Have a nice trip. And the mechanic said, are you going to let him stay on there? I said, just shut the door so I can deal with him at the other end.
Not my problem.
We had one at Queensgate, which is in Cincinnati, and have what they have a hump yard where they push cars over the hill. Boy, am I digressed from property law, haven't I? They push cars over the hill, and then they have a series of switches where they separate cars to go on different trains going in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sometimes the computer doesn't control the car speeds rolling down these hills as well as it should.
Right.
So they hit very heavy down in the bowl. That's where you call the different tracks, you call it the bowl. So at one point, we're humping cars down in the bowl, and a few minutes later, we look, and this is at night. And here comes some guy walking up out of the boat. We're like, is that a guy down there? Look at this guy. And he's staggering all over the place. Must be drunk or something. He comes walking up. He's all bloody. His arm is hanging down like it's broken or something like that. And we're like, what happened to you? He goes, I was in a boxcar and you guys humped the hell out of me. Evidently, it overspent down in the bowl, and when it hit the cars on the thing, like if you have an empty car hit loaded cars,
oh,
that empty car stops real quick.
Yeah.
And so it must have hit, and it threw him from one end of the car to the other.
He knew
it messed the dude up.
He even knew the terminology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I picked up guys before that said they do this for their vacation. They worked regular desk jobs, had plenty of income, but this is how they like to spend their vacation. They would hobo across the country riding trains.
Huh.
In boxcars. And it wasn't because they didn't have money. That was just that was their form of entertainment.
They just liked the hobo lifestyle.
They knew the language. They knew how the trains worked. They knew where to look for the yards, what to get in and how to do it.
They owned a harmonica.
And a knapsack bag thing on a stick. Yeah. A bandana tied on a stick with all their stuff in there. And they all sang Oh, Susanna.
Oh, my gosh.
Boy, did I digress.
I knew if we brought up the railroad, we get some stories out of you.
There's always railroad stories.
One common easement that you see is a utility easement.
Oh, like the telephone lines?
The telephone lines, gas things lines. Like that, gas lines. Now, telephone lines and things that electric lines, things that go over top of things, usually you don't have easements for those because they're up high. Whereas when you have sewer lines, storm drains, things like that, they're usually actually on the deeds and on the actual drawings that show them running through there. For example, if you have are fortunate enough to own a piece of property where the cell phone company wants to put a cell phone tower, you would give them basically an easement to get all the way up to the cell phone tower as well.
But then you would live under a cell phone tower.
Well, if you have a large enough piece of property.
Oh, might not be right near you.
Huh? Yeah. I'm not talking about like in town. I'm talking about like
out in the country.
Out in the country.
Out Wayne.
That's right. Some other ones, sidewalk easements, like we talked about, like public right of ways. Mm-hmm. View easements, though, if you have a good view of something and somebody tries to build something that blocks it, you could maybe try to get sue them over that. Driveways is a common one where somebody doesn't have a driveway and they put a driveway in over a piece of property to get to their house or to their garage or something like that. Beach accesses, as we talked about. Recreational easements. So basically, like if somebody owns a piece of property and the government wants to give them some sort of tax credit or something like that, they could actually give a recreational easement, so it allows public to use the private land and they get a credit for it. So it's one of the different kinds of ways of it.
We're going to give you credit.
Yep.
I want cash.
So yeah, those are the different kind of easements, and there's, you know, a bunch of different ones.
Let me ask you this. You talked about high up. The lines are high up, so you don't need it.
Yeah.
How do you determine, like, you buy a piece of property maybe in a downtown area, how high can you go? Do you have to have is there a height easement? I mean, can you build a 50-story building as long as you own the piece of property, or are there laws that govern how high you can go?
It's 46 feet.
46 feet?
Yep.
I don't believe you.
Yep, 46 feet.
That can't be right. There's buildings taller than 46 feet.
That's an answer. Nope.
You gave me an answer. It's just not a correct one. It's a choice, not a good one, but it's a choice.
The correct answer is I don't really know. It probably varies. I know some places have like different zoning requirements, and that you're getting a little bit of zoning issues there too about building height and things like that.
I guess so.
For example, like in Hilton Head, you can't have any signs like advertisements that are over a certain amount of feet, and they can't be lit up at night, no billboards, things like that. But as far as like power lines and things like that, those are definitely going to be specified by some sort of regulatory agency or code, which says how high those lines should be. So,
all right. Cause what made me think of it when we were in Seattle for PodCon, and they have a lot of strange buildings in Seattle, and they had one, and the best way I know to describe it is like a popsicle. You went in, this was an office building, and it was just a small area down at the basement with security guards. So you had to get in and, you know, be checked in. And then there was elevators, and you went up about four floors to reach the first floor. Because all that was on the first floor was that security desk down there. Then you went up about four floors in this narrow area, and then the building expanded out to where it was great big. So it was the land that it was on was actually small, but it stuck out over the buildings below it and the road and beside it and everything else to where it expanded out after it went up. And I've never seen a building like that. I wouldn't want to be in it. I'd be scared it was going to tip over. It looked very tippy.
I'm pretty sure it probably wasn't, but
it sure looked tippy. I wouldn't want to be in it. They say, you know, all you fat guys can't get on the same side of the building. That's not good.
Hey, Smurl, get out of this office. You're too fat.
We got too many fat guys in this office. Got to get some on the other side.
That's like if you've ever been on a smaller plane and they're trying to assign you, like, how much do you weigh? If you get on a plane and they ask you how much you weigh, it's a small plane.
Well, in the Spirit trip I was on, there were some groups that were traveling, and apparently they were trying to get up and move around to whatever benefited them or whatever. And I think the stewardesses or whatever were getting a little upset. So they got the pilot to get on there and say, everybody go to your assigned seat now and sit there. We have to figure out what the weight balance on the plane is. And I'm like, what? This is, you know, six people across, three seats on each side of the aisle, and they got to figure out what the weight balance is. It went back 40 rows or something like that. This plane should not have a problem with who's sitting where. And it was mostly full anyway. So I think they were just trying to get people to sit down. I hope.
It's one of those ploys.
Yeah.
Your life depends on it.
I have employed a ruse.
A clever ruse. It's a red herring. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over different legal terms and ask Tommy if he knows what they are, if he remembers. Now,
There was way too many terms today. I will never remember all of them.
This episode had a lot of legal terms.
Golly, more than I've ever heard. I almost went to sleep.
Thanks. I hope all of our listeners feel exactly the same way.
This episode is sponsored by Somonex. Have a nice sleep.
This episode is brought to you by Sleep Number. What's your number? Doesn't matter, as long as I'm listening to court appointed. So this episode on Legal Briefs, I'm going to ask you some really basic ones because there were so many.
Oh, boy.
What is an affirmative easement?
An affirmative easement is an easement that you have over somebody else's property.
And that contrast that with a...
negative easement?
Yes.
A negative easement means that you can get someone to not do something on their property because it upsets you or whatever.
Kind of. Yeah, that's right. It's kind of similar to an injunction. So you're basically trying to stop them from exercising an otherwise legal right on their property.
Like that odor easement.
Yes. Like
from last week.
The odor easement.
They were going to buy up all those houses to create an odor easement.
Oh, yes. The odor easement. I thought you were making a foot joke.
Well, that's odor eaters.
Yeah. I thought you were stretching out eaters to... never mind.
The teenage boy that put on odor eater shoes and disappeared? Is that what you meant?
No. Who's that?
Never mind.
Okay. Dominant and servient estate.
Dominant is the one that's exerting the easement upon someone else, and servient is the place that is having to lay down and receive the easement.
Also known as the someone else. Yep, that's right. What is an express easement?
An express easement is one that basically you've already agreed to when somewhere in the past, and so when it comes time to happen, you just look out your window and it's there.
It's in writing.
Yeah.
It's expressly stated in writing or deed.
Yeah, somewhere in the
contract,
past.
A covenant, something along those lines.
Or an HOA.
HOA, yep. Now, what is it called? What kind of easement is it if you have a piece of property but you can't get to a public right of way? And you need to get
captive.
No.
Oh, I thought you said it was captive. Cornered.
No.
Parceled.
Nope.
Disjointed.
Your answers are?
Impertinent.
No.
Pertinent.
Easement by necessity.
Oh, easement by necessity.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for there.
That sounds pretty necessary.
Yeah, so that's an easement.
I need
one.
An easement to the necessary.
And then what is the kind of easement that is very similar to adverse possession?
That's that hostile one where you have to yell at the guy to kiss your ass every time you walk over
it. That's right.
It's a hostile easement.
It's a prescriptive easement. I'll go ahead and let's go ahead and tell you it's a prescriptive easement. that's what that's
for. You're
tired
of seeing me struggle around, don't you? Just making stuff up.
Let's just cut to the chase. Let's get down to brass tacks here.
Did you see what we finally resolved that was?
No.
Well, we didn't really resolve it, I guess. The best answer that I saw, now some people said it had to do with the brass tacks that are the tacks in chairs.
Where,
like
was,
in furniture.
Where was this?
This is on our Facebook page. Oh, do you ever look at it?
Yeah, I do sometimes. I work. I have a job. So sometimes I'm actually too busy to look at Facebook.
Oh, I can't believe you might be too busy to look at Facebook. Zuckerberg's going to have to fix that.
He might have to.
Yeah.
Well, I think Facebook's looking at me all the time, so.
But one person said, or one description is that it's brass tacks or the finishing tacks that are used on furniture.
Oh, okay.
That were used on furniture. But the one that sounded more like it when they went through, the real answer is nobody really knows where it came from. So they're looking at likely scenarios. It used to be when they measured material that was like put in the counter, like at the old mercantile, and they had two brass tacks in there, and that was like a yard or whatever when you're measuring material. So get down to brass tacks, that's the distance between the two brass tacks, which is what they usually use for that measurement. Said in the old days, they would just use their arm. But, you know, a lot of people's arms are different. So
a lot of people's?
Yeah. So one guy might have long arms, and you'd be getting more if I did it. I got long arms. The other guy might have stubby arms. You know what a stubby arm guy measuring material. So they put the brass tacks in the counter, and that's how you measure it. So you get a legal amount there.
Huh. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But that was not at all what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was neither of those answers.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
No, me neither.
We learned a lot of trivia.
Yeah, just from making stupid comments. And then we learn trivia about where it came from.
That's right. So if you want to learn more trivia like this, go to our court-appointed Facebook page, and you can learn all kinds of interesting trivia.
That's right.
And I'm on there all the time, as you can tell.
But what I like is nobody really knows, but the first that it popped up was like in a newspaper in Texas in 1860-something.
Yeah.
That was the first that it was ever, you know, reported as a term.
So if I start the rumor that my great-great-grandfather invented the phrase brass tacks,
no one could dispel it.
Nobody could dispel that?
No, you could take a brass tack easement.
I don't think that's a thing. It was not on my list.
Well, put it down. It's a hostile brass tack. Eat my brass tacks.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...